kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Joining as usual, Cole, how are you doing?
Oh, now you want to include me. I see how
it
is. Oh,
God. I leave you out of one pre-show tweet, and it's the end of the world.
It is. I'm an attention whore, and you hurt my feelings. God damn it. I guess I'm fine, Joe.
You're fine.
I guess I'm fucking fine.
We are not alone, though. We are being joined right now, two of the fine folks from Beautifun Games, Lucia and Aleix. Did I say it right?
Yes, yes, perfect. Yes.
I try.
He did it. Yeah. You know, so he didn't add the last names.
Oh, God. No. I'm not even going to try. I'm not even going to try. That'll be nothing but trouble. So how is everyone today? How are you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you. Thank you for having us. We're very excited. I just shared your Twitch streaming link with all my friends. Like, Mom, come watch me. I'm on something like TV.
I'm on the internet. Yay.
Yes, I see. Thank you for inviting us. Yes. And we are fine. We are happy of being here and to be introducing the game to the world. So, yes.
I'm thrilled to have you on the show. You were here to talk about your game, Professor Lupo and His Horrible Pets, which is out now on the Switch and on Steam. For the people who don't know what this game is, give us the sales pitch.
Okay, so Professor Lupo and His Horrible Pets is a puzzle adventure game infested with aliens, basically. I've been reading some articles that described it as like Jurassic Park meets Pac-Man, for instance, which I found hilarious. There was another one that called it like a alien-infested hide-and-seek game. I think that they are all pretty close to reality. So, it's an indie game. It's basically a puzzle. It has 100 levels divided into 5 narrative chapters. And we put some great efforts in the story. And Aleix is both the puzzle designer and the story, the brain behind the story. So if you have any questions about that, he's here.
Yes, but Lucia is the peer person, so she has been the right person to do that pitch. It has sounded very well. Yes. I would buy the game with this pitch. Yes.
I think the first question I have to ask is, who the hell has pets like this?
Oh, well, yes.
Someone like Professor Lupo. No, it's the easy answer, but yes, you have to be a strange person, but maybe that kind of mad doctor he is, so someone like that. Like
I would say maybe John Hammond.
Oh boy.
Or maybe anyone of us. I want to have a Forex in my house. I don't know. You don't have these feelings about the pets. You don't want a osculum in a cage in your bedroom. Maybe I don't know. We have to ask people because I don't know the answer.
I would have like half of the pets, the cute half of the pets,
yes.
You know?
Cute half, yeah.
Yeah, I think those halves are adorable. Otherwise, if it has to be like the whole thing, because they have this double nature where they look like super cute and like, oh, and then they turn into these horrifying, murderous monsters that you just want to get away from as fast as you can. So if we could just have like the pet without the horrible part, that would be great. Thank you.
Yeah. See, now Professor Lupo strikes me. Professor Lupo strikes me as the kind of person who on Earth would think a possum was cute.
Probably. Yes, I would say. He thinks they are magnificent creatures, if yes. I'm quoting his words correctly.
And you have to give him credit for all of his craziness, and they might not be the prettiest pets, but he genuinely loves them.
Oh, yeah. He cares about them. I think
that's the best thing about it. Like, just the way he talks about them is that you could tell that he's in love with all these creatures.
Yes.
Even as horrible as they are, like, he's genuine. He's like the person who gets excited over cockroaches. And it's charming, even though it's a little repulsive.
You know, you say that, it reminds me... Oh, sorry. No, go ahead.
I wanted to say that charming but a little repulsive is the perfect description of Professor Lupo. It's my opinion.
You know those people who love bugs and they have, like, bugs for pets? You know, it's kind of like very CSI-ish, so to speak, but I have this picture in my head of, like, a guy with tons of, like, snakes and roaches and stuff like that on like, glass cages. I think that's Professor Lupo, but with aliens, in a way.
Yes. Someone like them, but who enjoys to see the bug eating other bugs in the cage, no?
Yeah.
Yes, that kind of, yes, maybe.
So a crazy person is the person who has all of these pets.
Yes, maybe. It has to be.
The funny thing about him, though, is that as much as he loves his pets... He has no fucking regard for the human.
Oh, no.
He will happily use the interns as bait and just throw them through there. Like, he's like, people can fuck off. But look at this really ugly worm I found in space.
Because he's a philanthropist. So he thinks that he's a philanthropist. And even in that case, he doesn't care about the humans. It's a little contradiction, yes.
Charming but repulsive.
Charming but repulsive.
Yeah, yes.
I'm going to write that down, charming but repulsive.
That's the name of our show this week.
Yes. Everybody, all of us want to be charming but repulsive, but nobody gets that thing.
So I was kind of surprised with the intern that you just have the one same little bald dude the whole time. I kind of expected you guys to, like, throw it into where it would either randomize the intern every time it was killed.
Oh, no, there's specific checkpoints every time he gets killed.
Yeah, there's checkpoints, but the look of the intern is always the same. And I was like, aw, that's a missed opportunity if the intern had changed looks every time.
Just randomly designed.
Yeah.
Because there are a lot of it's our intern. We love that intern. It's the intern of our hearts. We have no space for other interns. Sorry,
bald spot. It gets to you. I understand. That's why we keep Joe around.
Hey, I'm being commanded by chat. By the way, Tokamoto and Sosik 2004 are commanding me to acknowledge them in chat. So I am acknowledging you. I am Parthax Beardman. So,
hello, people on the internet.
They love my beard.
It's better to be known by your beard than the bald spot, like the intern.
True. That's why the camera is like cut, so you don't see the top of my head. Yeah. I could use the excuse that it's to show off the SML shirt that I'm wearing, but no, it's to cut off the lack of hair on the top of my head.
Yep. Did you feel identified with the intern?
Because if you are, we have succeeded. It's our intention that every player gets a connection with the intern, with this kind of anti-hero.
the intern had hair. Anti-hero.
A little bit.
Yeah, the intern had hair, so I can't compare.
He had that little crown going in the middle. It's gone.
I think people are in the reviews. Anyone speaks about the intern's head. I don't know why. It should be the first point in the review, but I don't know.
I think that people don't expect interns to be starting to get bald, but that's because people don't realize that there are men who start getting bald very, very young.
Yeah. Like my husband's brothers, they 19.
The team beneath the game. It's all the team is that. Yes, it's a joke.
Well, in today's economy, it's not uncommon to see 30 and 40 year old interns because the economy sucks. Yeah. And so I didn't even think anything of it to see a balding intern because I was just like, yeah, that seems about right.
Yeah. I mean, you gotta get paid somehow.
Yeah. Well, you're if he's not getting paid, he's doing better than the rest.
I am sure about the intern is not paid because we didn't pay him, so...
Well, I gotta acknowledge the crowd one more time because Awesome Prime just dropped some biddies in chat, so...
Dropping bits!
Yes, dropping bits. Thank you so much, Prime, for dropping the biddies. But back to things. How long has the game been in development? How long of a development cycle did this game go through?
Well, it took around 2 years to develop the PC version, PC Mac version, you know, the Steam version, basically. And then once we got the lot check from Nintendo, like the green light to be released on Switch, then we decided to postpone the launch and just work on the port because we wanted to launch both versions at the same time.
Yes.
So I would say a little over 2.5 years, yeah.
Yes. And a little extra at the beginning, thinking about the prototype and all of that, yes. But yes, 2.5 years is a good number.
Is there any potential for the game to come to other consoles?
I mean,
would love to bring it to PlayStation 4 eventually. Yeah.
Wrong one. Nope. Interview's over. Sorry, Xbox fan.
Oh, right. Sorry about that. I don't know. I think we could because since the game is on the Steam version, it's completely compatible with controllers. Mm-hmm. So I think that the port wouldn't be that hard. I mean, I don't really know much, but I think it's, you know, the worst part is already done. So
Yes. The port, I think it will be easy from the Switch. You can pass through all the game using the controller Pro, no? So it's more or less the same as it will be used in PlayStation 4 or in Xbox. So I think that all of these are ports that are possible, no?
So you're saying there's a chance.
Yes, there's a chance, and I think that it will happen. I am pretty sure that it will happen. Yeah, I'm not saying that for years now. Yeah.
We're gonna get him in trouble with PR. Is what's happening. Wouldn't be the first time we've done that.
Oh no! Hey, that's our job. We have to push the buttons and see what kind of answers we could get.
Yeah, just shoot. Push all the buttons. We're here for it. Yes.
So the levels in the game, you said there's over 100 of them, but they seem pretty straightforward, like once you've gone from A to B. What is there? What kind of things have you added in to increase replayability so that it doesn't get stale if you replay the levels?
Well, you did mention on your review, you mentioned the collectibles, and you mentioned you passed by them, completely ignoring them.
We'll go back to those on another day.
That's what we're aiming for in terms of replayability. So the first time you play, the first time you face a level, it's quite likely that you won't be able to get those collectibles because they are placed in places where you still don't know as much as about the pet's behavior to get them. So once you start playing more and more levels and then you start learning more on how to manipulate the creatures, then you can always go back and you won't lose your progress and you can start getting those juicy collectibles. And also, there's a hidden ending if you complete the 100% of the game, right, Alish?
Yes. Yes, we call it replayability because we truly think that you cannot solve it the first time you play the game. The first thing is because, as Lucia has said, you have to learn more about the aliens. Actually, this is the main point of the game. You have to learn about the aliens, and it's you that, as a player, you grow and you are each time more able to do things that you at the beginning you even didn't know that it can be done, no? and there is each level has his own replayability, and there are a lot of different challenges. No, maybe one there are some levels that had a hard version, and it's almost a complete new level. And I don't know, maybe a level, it's the challenge is to ask you to do something that you don't even know that it was possible, as to pass a level without, in another way.
Truck driving by.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's me. I'll mute myself whenever I'm not talking.
I thought that it was them. They to quiet me to because I was taking too long, and they put us out of a car and this catch me. Okay.
No, we don't have technology like that to throw sound effects on the show.
This is when my rooster crows. This is the future.
Okay. Science fiction. Okay.
We're the laziest podcast you'll ever be on. Like, something fucks up, we're like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, pretty much.
In any case, I have already finished it.
Oh man, I don't even remember where we were.
So how many different alien types are actually in the game?
I'm glad. Lucia, I'll answer you. Sorry.
No. There's seven types of aliens that you get to meet while cruising the Aurora space station in order to escape. That's seven types of aliens.
And which one's your favorite?
Well, my personal favorite is the Furax, which is the blue one that. Mm-hmm. Kind of looks like a velociraptor in a way. You know which one?
Yeah.
I think I really like that one because it's the smartest of the aliens, and it also, I think it unbalances the scales a lot when it comes, when you first meet it. It's like, oh, I got this. You know, you're kind of cruising through the levels. You're kind of getting your, you know, you're on your groove and you're finally learning, and then the Furax comes in and it's just, fucks everything up. And I'm just saying fuck because I've heard you call curse. Yeah.
It's funny.
We are a fuck friendly podcast.
We are. Yeah,
it's my kind of podcast. So yeah, it fucks everything up. And it's actually scary, you know, when it comes, whenever it's fast and it's smart and it can, you know, go through air ventilation. So yeah, better watch out when he comes up.
The it's first funny. Time I ran into that one, I was like, because I thought I was doing so well. And then I just started dying miserably.
I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
It's funny because I hate the Furax. It's the alien that I most hate because it's so intelligent that it's very hard to do a level with a Furax, and that the player has a chance of solving the level. It's very hard to design a level like that, and I hate the Furax the most. I am sure about that. and for the same reason, my favorite alien is, if you are asking me to, that it's the Sagitta, one of the most basic aliens, because it's very easy to make a level with a Sagitta. You can make a level with a Sagitta and two doors, and it's very. It's a solid level, and I appreciate that from the aliens to be easy build a level with them.
So you like the aliens that are easy to work with?
Yes. It has sense, no?
Because he's the game developer, and he had to make levels with the aliens.
And I don't know. I could answer that I love all the aliens, or I love the more horrendous aliens, but I have choose be honest with you.
Hey, you have to be honest.
Yes, it happens to me.
That's what we're here for.
Yes.
So you said that there's over 100 levels in the game. Did you create any that were too difficult that you decided not to put them in the game?
Yes, of course. By sure. We have people think that the game it's very hard or it's hard. I don't know. Well, there are different opinions about that. But what I know is that if our boss, the CEO of the company of the Beauty Fan Games, if it weren't for him, it would be more difficult because my levels always are too hard, and he's always thinking about the player. He cares about the player. I don't know why, but he cares. And he,
I appreciate that.
Yes, I know. At the end, maybe yes, and yes, we have discarded a lot of levels. Maybe for that, or maybe because they weren't enough funny or fun, or for a lot of different reasons. Yes.
Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, man. So what is the plan with those leftover levels? Are you guys considering DLC for the game at all?
Well, I let Lucia answer.
Oh, right. Yeah. Just throw me the tough questions. Thank you very much. Thank you. No, I'm joking. It's fine. We are working on something. I can't really say much, but I can tell you that we're working on something. And that you should follow us on Twitter to find out more when we can tell you about it.
Oh, that's so sneaky.
I'm sorry. I'm sorry. You know, it's your job to push the buttons. It's my job to push them back. So
I will say that. Yeah, sorry.
No, go ahead.
No, that if we had to discard a level, it's for a reason. And actually, this level won't be used. It's the sad thing. It will be erased for all eternity. Anything we do in the future, it won't use that level. So I'm not sure, but well.
There's a benefit to the easier levels.
Yes.
And not using the super hard ones. And that way I don't have to give it a bad review and be like, it's impossible! Because I always feel like shit when I have to do that.
The super hard levels are seal it in a box and put it in the sea. And it's something biohazard, so you don't have... The humankind, it has not been involved with that level. So we are protecting you from them.
You know, Cole, I have to confess, I had some problems with some levels where I was like, this shit is impossible.
Oh, yeah.
So honest, Lucia, not be so honest.
No, but it was my fault because then eventually usually for puzzle games, but in this game in particular, my recommendation is whenever you are stuck on a level, just kind of rage quit. Just go for it, just rage quit, and then come back to it maybe in a couple of hours or the next day or whenever you want to go back to it. And then you probably, you know, when you have your head is more fresh and you maybe think of something that you hadn't think before, and then that's moment when you just stomp your head and like, oh, God, I'm so stupid, I didn't see this before. You know, but sometimes you get stuck and you just keep doing the same thing over and over. Of course, it doesn't work. If it didn't work the first time,
it won't work the second one. My biggest problem is that once I start to figure out what parts of it work and where I'm stuck at, I will get to the beginning again or wherever I was, you know, like the last checkpoint that I made it through, and I'll rush through, and then I start fucking up earlier and earlier into the levels. And that's when I just have to go, I'm going to go play a point and click that doesn't require thought. Because if it requires thought, my brain's too fried for this. Because I just start to be like, well, I know the answer to this part, so I can just fly through it. And then I don't time it right. And this game needs timing.
Yes.
Yes. Yes. Because the intern, he doesn't run for his life. He walks
at all.
Actually, it is the idea. It's a puzzle game where you are not in outside the game. You are not solving the puzzles from your safeness. No. You are inside the puzzle, inside the aliens, and yes, you have to control the times, and because if not, you will be devoured by the aliens, and that makes the intention is to make a game that it's tense. I don't know. It's you are worried. You are with your nerves. You are not calm, and that's actually the feeling that we wanted to produce. No, you are in a spaceship with aliens. You don't have to be calm. That's not even if the intern appears be calm all the time, but you don't have to be.
I don't think you can be calm while playing this game. No. Sometimes.
So we have succeeded at least in that thing.
Oh man.
No, there's definitely no being calm when, like, the problem is, like, you click the doors to open them or and you think you've got it, and then the monster starts to, the aliens will start to come at you, and you realize very quickly that you didn't have anything at all.
Yeah, you don't got
it. And then your only reaction is,
just run!
All you can do about it, and then you're just like, just move a little faster, intern.
Yes, yes, run, intern, run. Yes, yes.
Yeah, try well, to he does
run monsters.
The less hair he has, the faster he should move. He's a little lighter.
He's not being paid to run, you know. He's just an intern. I think that, but at the same time, I think it's so satisfying when you finally master. At least one of the pets. Like, for instance, I remember the first time I got a collectible that was like inside a vermis cage, so to speak. The vermis is the long, like, maggot looking one. The one that looks like a worm.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember the first time I got a collectible that was inside one of the boxes with a vermis just throwing around, and then I got it and I left out of there and I was like, oh man, I'm so good at this. I'm so smart, you know. You get that feeling of beating the game and feeling smart. And I think that's the catch with puzzle games in general. I think that puzzle games lovers love feeling smart about themselves, you know.
Yeah.
They're like, oh yeah.
Oh, my brain is just golden.
Hey, that's why I play Tetris as much as I do, because I'm good at it and it makes me feel smart.
Right? Yes. Yeah.
Actually, that's a main point of the game, too. The improvement of the player. No? It's something that I like because the player it's time better without experience points and without unlock new weapons or anything like that. You just it's you, the player, who is each time more and more better, no? And I think that this is something that we wanted to achieve, to get. And it reminds me some platforms like Mario, when I played Mario Sunshine a lot of years ago, each time I were better playing the game, and it was just me, and that was very satisfying. Not the game giving me things, but me learning more and more, and that was something that I wanted to put in this game.
Just the learning process.
Yes, yes, yes. It sounds silly, but it's very satisfying, I think.
I think it's important, though, that it's that's what you were aiming for, because it's definitely what you did. Like, there's moments when new mechanics are introduced to the puzzles, and you don't actually have to, like, point out, hey, this is what switch you need to do, this switch is timed, or you need to hit the switches in this order, and yet you can still intuitively look at the puzzles and figure out, oh, this switch is going to do that, or this switch is on a timer, without needing it to be pointed out to you. So yeah. You do learn how the mechanics are going to build as you go through the game without it being out. Yeah, without it being written out in spoon fed to you. And that's important. Puzzle games, that's a fine line with puzzle games.
Yes, I like that you think like that because it's what we wanted to do. So I'm happy to listen that. Yes.
And I appreciate the fact that if you're doing terribly at the game will help you with the infrared view, and it shows you the paths that the monsters take. The game, it just gradually assists you to help you complete the level instead of just getting more and more frustrated. And I like that.
And without making you feel like an idiot.
Yes. Yeah. It's a balance that you have to get. You cannot help the player so soon, or he becomes frustrated, no? But you cannot let him suffer for all eternity. You have to help the player, and it's something hard to achieve, but we have tried.
That's a balance a lot of games mess up these days too, because there's so many games that focus on being hard for the sake of being hard.
Oh yeah.
That they don't put any effort in to think about players and whether or not they're actually enjoying themselves in it.
No, that's not our case, by sure. And actually, I don't want to make hard levels just to be hard, even with what I said before. It's.
I mean, you do, but you don't want to publish those.
No, it's that sometimes you have to suffer to achieve something that is worth it, no? And in that case, it doesn't matter to me if the level is hard. I am far enough, I think.
Yeah, I think that you don't want the player to feel frustrated, completely frustrated. You know, it demands a certain amount of like patience, and you have to do a level multiple times. But it's not, the idea is not for the player to suffer and had a bad time, you know. The idea is eventually you will be able to solve it, and you will feel very good about yourself once you do, you know. So
we want the people, yes.
No, and also it advances the story, which is something that I think not many puzzle games have as well, which is every time you complete a level, you get a little more story, a little glimpse of how, you know, what's really going on in the Aurora Space Station, and maybe a little more about the intern's past and Professor Lupo's true intentions and stuff like that. You get to watch the story develop between cutscenes, and every time you finish a level, you get a little more dialogue and stuff like that. So I think that's also a little bit of a reward for the player, so to speak. Like, yeah, you got to pass the level, and you also get a little more of the story.
And it's funny, too. It's a very funny story, and I love the humor in the game.
You're making Aleix very, very happy saying that.
What can I say? Yes. No, but the story is important because it's that you I'm convinced that you need a reward to pass the levels. If there is a puzzle game without a narrative, you only have more levels to solve the levels, and at the end it's not enough. I think even if the levels are very funny, you need another reason. I don't know why, but you need it. And the narrative is, I think, the most rewarding thing that you can give to a player, I think. And if you think that the story is funny, I am happy. So that's all. Yeah.
Yeah. I love the humor in the game. Even something as early as like the green gas. It's like, oh yeah, it's harmless to humans, but if you breathe it, you die. Like, yes. It's not really harmless, is it?
Yes, more or less, yes. Yes.
Well, Plato has a very strange concept about life and death and what harms you and what doesn't. Plato is the AI of the space station, and it's the character that sets that line. And yeah, mm-hmm. It's got a very weird concept regarding human life in general.
I love it.
we wanted to make a combination of a silly humor, a very silly humor. That they are characters who are very ridiculous. No, I'm thinking about Hugo Kahn, and at the same time, we want to take us seriously. To the characters, think that they are not joking. For the things are very important to them, and it's that combination of very silly humor and life and death situations and things, and which I think that it works very well. I don't know, maybe
I agree.
So I thank agree. You.
Let's see, what other questions do I have? Have you taken this to different conventions or different trade shows? Have you shown it off at all?
Yes, we went to GDC last year and we showed it there. We also went to GCA this year and showed it there as well. We've also been to several indie events, like we went to Courage XL in San Francisco and the Indiepocalypse in San Francisco as well. It was taking place during the whole GDC week. And then we've also been to some events here in Spain. We went to a new event called Guerrilla Game Festival, which is in Madrid. We went there and took it. And we also went more recently, we went to Game Lab as well. It's another event here in Barcelona. Right. So we're planning on moving it around here in Spanish events mostly, because, you know, we have to go there. And it's, But yeah, we're looking forward for people to playing it. It's really nice. I really like being in events because we get to see the people play it live and get them to experience it for themselves, and it's very rewarding whenever you see, you know, someone laughing at the intern dying, for instance, or laughing at a joke from
the intern.
Anything but the intern. So I think that, you know, going to events and stuff like that, it's great. I think in several aspects, because for once you have the audience, you know, the people who go there, they are not indie developers, they're just people who love games and want to try new games, and that's like kind of your audience. But you also get to strengthen your relationships with other indie devs, which I think is super important, because, you know, we gotta stuck up for each other, you know. Yeah. We gotta show up for each other, support each other. And actually on the Steam version, we probably noticed that some of the collectibles, they are actually indie games, other indie games, iconic indie games, whatever, dare I say so. Because you have films, you have music, you have books, and you also have other indie games, because we wanted to find a way to kind of integrate the community, the indie dev community, within the game. So that's what we did. And of course we asked for their permission, of course. And thirdly, you know, the thing about events is that you also get to build relationships with journalists or, people who go there to maybe give a talk and talk about, you know, what their work. At Game Lab, we met a lot of wonderful people. We even met like the Minister of Culture and Sports here from Spain. So that was kind of rad. It was like, oh shit, you know, he's like a big deal. And you know, his presence being there, it's like he is acknowledging that video games are culture. So that's like really great for the industry. I love going to events. I would go to everyone if I could, seriously. Honestly.
Mel, you should look into an event called MagFest. That's the one I always get to every year.
MadFest?
MagFest. MagFest. Music and Gaming Festival.
Oh, okay. Where is it?
It's in the DC area.
Okay.
Washington, DC. It's in that area.
Is it in the winter? I don't want to freeze my ass off.
Yeah, it's in January.
Oh, man. Well, okay. I guess I'll have to make an effort. Are you guys going to be there?
I've been there every year. I'm trying to get Cole to go one of these years, but
it's a conscious effort.
Okay, I'll check it out. Yeah, we missed on PAX this year. I was very sorry. It was a couple of weeks after GDC, and I think that we missed out on that one because most people that we met on GDC went to PAX, and I heard awesome things about it. So I hope we don't miss it next year.
Yeah, I've never been able to make a PAX. I really want to. I've heard that they're an absolute blast. And my friend who went the one year, he was like, oh man, you just go booth to booth and you get all this free stuff. And like, I sold half of it and it paid for my trip to PAX. So hey, yeah, whatever works.
All the swag you get kind of pays for the game, yeah, for the trip. Yeah, sounds legit.
Gotta love it.
Mm-hmm.
But showing the game off at conventions, were there any situations where people were like extremely good at the game that it just blew you guys away? Or if there were people who were just absolutely awful at the game?
Yes, both.
Yeah. Yes, but the first case, I enjoy it. When someone begins to play the game and he doesn't left, he keeps playing until the demo ends, or even until the game ends. It's something very, very, very exciting. It's the best moment of someone who works in this market. Because you have been working in your at your home inside your mind all the time, not just for me, for all my partners, and then you go out and it's very, very, very exciting. Yes.
I remember seeing one guy in an event. He was very, very concerned about saving one of the warlords.
Yes.
It's one of the first levels. I think it's level 4 or 5.
Yes.
And you have like, there's a guy that says, open the door, that's an order. And he gets followed by a Sagitta. And, you know, you can save him, but like most people don't even try. Like, you know, fuck
because
the guy.
Because you don't have to, of course.
you don't have to. He's a freaking warlord, you know. It's like he's a bad person, so whatever, just die already. And he was like super, super concerned. I was like trying over again, no, I gotta save him, like how could I not? And I was like, dude, you're just a lawful good person. I've never met anybody, you know. Kind of reminded me of like, you know, that scene from Captain America where he throws himself over the grenade and he's like, no, get out, and it's a fake grenade. It was kind of like that, like, oh my god, you are so lawful good. I don't can I have a number or something?
That's awesome.
Those people are rare. They're like unicorns in the world.
I didn't ask for his phone number. I didn't think it was professional, but I would have because I was like surprised by
can
his.
Can I have your Twitter tag? I just want to be friends with you.
Yeah, exactly. The phone number would have been too much. It's like, hey, oh, do you want to subscribe to our newsletter? Just write your email here.
Be our friend, please.
Oh, we'll Lord. Bottle the next intern after you.
he didn't save him, no? So.
He managed to save him.
No, but he didn't succeed. He didn't save him, no? It's not possible. You are not ready in the third level to save that guy.
He did. He saved him.
I don't believe. Okay.
He tried many times until he did. He saved him. Yeah, he was a smart guy. I'm telling you.
So I am more admired of his smartness than his kindness.
Yeah.
I admire that more.
Yeah.
There you go. It's just like we could have burned it down and survived to beat it.
Jesus.
We now know that you are not a lawful good.
Me? Never. I was never a lawful good.
Yeah.
Me neither.
A little more on the chaotic.
You should be doing the interview to that guy. You
know? Yeah, let's find that guy. Get him on the show.
If only I had asked him for his phone number.
If only. Oh, damn it. Oh, man. So what games are you playing? When you're not working on Professor Lupo, what games are you enjoying right now?
So puzzle games and a very focused narrative games, very focused on narrative. I am very obsessed. I'm always seduced by a good narrative, and I don't know. I can say a lot of titles. What Remains of Edith Finch, or The Sexy Brutale, or The Observer. I don't know. They are a lot of and usually. I don't know why I choose indie games, because sometimes the narrative is, I don't know, maybe it takes more care, I don't know, but these kind of games, yes.
Yeah, no, not me. I'm a strategy, hard strategy kind of girl. I'm a Civilization 6 kind of girl. Maybe XCOM 2 sort of things. I like turn-based strategy. I like to think a lot, you know, make long-term decisions and short-term decisions and stuff like that. So yeah, I think I have over 600 hours on Civ 6 by now.
Oh, even, wow.
I
think,
wow.
Yeah. I've been thinking I should have like a Twitch channel or something like that. Like I should become an influencer about that.
You should. You know?
I'm getting too good at it not to show off.
You have to try it, Lucia.
Well, start up a stream.
Have you tried They Are Billions? Because that just recently came out, and it's very strategy heavy, but it's got zombies.
Which one?
They Are Billions.
Oh, They Are Billions? I read something about it. Yeah, I read good things about it.
That would probably be up your alley.
Oh, thank you, Go. I'll take it out.
Again. That's what I do. That's the whole reason they keep me here, because I just tell people, like, have you played this? And it's usually some obscure indie game.
Nice. Well, I'm very happy to have met you then.
My Twitter feed is just paycheck. My Twitter feed is just like obscure indie games and occasionally drawings.
That sounds amazing. I'll follow you right now. What's your handle?
At Eternal Rage, and Rage has an H in it, R H A G E.
Eternal Rage. Okay.
Because
we're creating friendships on this show.
Well, it's nice.
We're growing our follower counts.
That's what we do. Oh, man. I know we've been chatting for quite a while now. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about with the game that we didn't bring up?
I
don't think so. No. I mean, it's very a lot. Well, maybe we could include a shout out to our music composer, who did an amazing job, I think.
Yes, I think so. Yes, I love the music, and one of the themes that is called the Void theme. I love that theme especially, but I love the music. I think that fits very well. It's sad because when we ask the composer to make the music for the game, we ask him. That the music it has to be, it has no disturb the player, no? It has to be there, but you have to listen the music, but don't be focused on the music, because you are solving puzzles and the music is a loop, and you can finish crazy if you are listening the music all the time. And he has done this music that it fits so well that you, For the moment, don't hear it, and I think that it's an achievement, no? And sometimes it's very powerful, the music, but sometimes, and I think that it works perfectly, but sometimes people say the other thing that fits so well that you even notice that it's there, but it's sad because it's what we needed of the music, no? And his job was to be invisible, and that's sad for a composer to have to do that. But I think that he has done very well. It's Ars Angla, is the name of the composer, and it's Ars Angla and Marcus Fate, and they are two guys. And well, I am very, we are very proud of the music that joins Professor Lupo.
Is the soundtrack available anywhere?
Yeah. Not yet, but it will be. No, it will be on Steam. Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, we just launched the game. Can you give a girl a break?
I was going to say, if it was available, we could play some of it on the show.
Oh, well, I can send you over some tracks, and you can include it. I don't know if you edit it or something.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. I can send you the links.
That is about the extent of Joe's editing prowess.
Yeah, pretty much.
Adding music at the end.
Yes, I add music.
Okay. We're so proud of him.
Dark Raven Demon in chat says, what would you like to say about the voice actors?
I love the voices. It's clear that I am falling in love with the game, no? So everything it seems to me the best. But and that's even more clear when it's about other people, no? I can have my problems with the screenplay. I don't know, but the music, it's brilliant. The voices are brilliant, and I am very convinced about that. And the characters are a cliche. We use characters that are a cliche, and we want to go beyond the cliche in a way. But the voices we ask to the actors and the actresses to make the roles of a cliche, and they do it very well. And I can imagine the game without the voices. I can't imagine the game without the voices. And I don't know. I like all of them, but I like the voice of the intern. I think that it's a very hard character to play because he's so calm and so strange and so he has no blood in his veins and at the same time it has to like the character, no? Because more or less the player has to like the character and Mr. Gogeta is the name of the actor. It does it very well. I don't know. There are sentences that I wrote and I didn't even know how it would be pronounced. There is a very complicated sentence in the game and he says the sentence with a naturally that I am very impressed of. And that's my impression about the actors and the actresses. Well, my impression and the impression of the team. I am the voice of all of them. Yes.
Nice.
As well, you will say that, no? What do you think about the voices, no? Maybe I can ask to you. Maybe you are not so.
Vehicle driving by.
Yes.
I shut up. I finish here my.
I'm doing it on purpose.
Yes, I know. You have the technology.
It was all a rise.
I knew you had.
Yeah, I think that I would like, regarding the actor and actresses, I would like to include a special shout out to the woman who plays Fire. She's actually, it was her first, if I'm not mistaken, it was her first voiceover work. Actually, and I think that she did also an amazing job. She actually tweeted us, I think it was yesterday, and she was very, very cute. And, you know, it's not, yeah, like Alej says, they're not like easy characters to bring them to life. And I think that they all did an amazing job, especially when, like, it was her first, I still can't believe it was her first job, you know? So, yeah. Great,
yes.
Great job.
That's really cool.
Her name was Susie Young, no? And you answered the tweet saying that Fire won't be the same without her. And I thought that actually Fire don't even exist without the actors, without Susie Young, because it's very strange the way in that the character and the voice joins one and the other and becomes one. It's something very, very funny for the person who has write the dialogues how the actors and the actresses, and in this case Susie Young with Fire, takes the character and now belongs to her, no?
Yeah. Well, Cole, did you have any other questions you wanted to ask before we wrap things up?
No, I think we rolled through most of them. I think we just kind of did it on accident, and I didn't even get to, like, form proper questions. We just talked about it, and then I was like, check.
Cover that.
All right. Good, though. I like when that happens better. It's far more organic than me sitting here, like, reading off.
You're just lazy.
I poorly, exactly. That's why I'm on this fucking podcast.
It's more a conversation than an interview. It feels great. Yes.
That's when I like those kind of interviews far more.
Yeah.
If we're all stuffy and it's all like, sometimes the PR people are breathing down the throat and you're just like, if we don't do this properly and sound like a professional podcast, this is going to go poorly.
Oh, no.
When a PR person drops an F-bomb, everything is fine.
Yes. Yeah. Fuck yeah, you know?
That's a good show.
That is a good show. I'm happy with this interview. This was a fun time. Thank you so much to the both of you for coming on and chatting with us. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on. Everyone else, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more show. I can't talk. Lucia, Aleix, again, thank you both for coming on and chatting with us. Do either of you have any final words to wrap this up?
Yes, follow us on social media at Beautifun Games everywhere. Please, thank you. Bye.
Yes, I think you enjoy playing. Yes,
thank you both so much. I had a great time. Anytime you guys wanna, I mean, I don't know what else I could talk about, but I'm down for being here because it's been great. It's been super fun. Yes. Let's be friends.
I have enjoyed this hour, so thank you. Yes.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for sticking around. Another thanks to Lucia and Aleix for coming on and chatting about the game. Professor Lupo is available now on Switch and Steam. Go check it out. It is awesome. That said, we have a lot more show to take care of, a lot more games to talk about. We are starting things off. Tim Ekibis is here. Tim, how are you doing?
Good. I'm looking up Professor Lupo right now just to get a gander at it.
Okay. It's good.
Professor Lupo and his horrible pets. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Just want to see what it was. All right. Yeah. Hey, I'm good. Hey, what episode is this? What are we on?
97. 497.
Oh, my God. 497. Three more to go till the big code stravaganza.
I know. We are so close. We've been doing a lot of codes in our streams lately, too. The one episode, a guy walked out of there with 8 games.
I saw that. Yeah, you should listen live.
Yeah.
Because you're like letting people make off... commit a murder and walk away.
Hey, you gotta be quick on the draw.
Yeah.
How was your weekend? Yeah. How's things?
I don't remember my weekend. That was too long ago at this point. Yeah, things are good. Very busy. Got lots of stuff going on coming up in the next few weeks that I can't talk about. Not for reviews, but for the video making business that, rose me to fame. But yeah,
you should pimp out and share the URL so that people could check it out.
Yeah, go. You should probably just look up X Strike Studios on Facebook and like us there for updates. I don't think the website's been updated in years, but Facebook's how everybody, whatever. When shit goes down, you're going to know. y'all are going to know. I'm keeping it quiet till then, you know. Keep it on the DL, not like we used to, where it's like, oh yeah, this is what we're doing, and then 3 years later, here's the actual thing.
Fair to keep it locked up until it's actually done and ready to go.
Yeah, yep, pretty much. Yeah, so doing the opposite of what we used to do. A lesson learned, perhaps, if you will. But yeah, A lot of stuff to do in the next few days. All right. Like, record this review.
All right. If you're ready to just dive into things, let's do it.
I'm ready. Let's do it.
All right. First game to talk about tonight is called Attack on Titan 2 Final Battle, developed by Omega Force, published by Koei Tecmo, released July 5th on Xbox One, Switch, PS4, and PC for $59.99. The Final Battle content can be bought as an upgrade for current Attack on Titan 2 owners for $39.99. Experience the immersive story of the anime alongside Eren and his companions as they fight to save humanity from the threat of the deadly human-devouring titans. Try your hand in operating the omnidirectional mobility gear, maneuvering and flying through the sky to counter the titans, and feel the thrill and satisfaction of battling giant opponents. Tim, tell us about it.
The thrill and satisfaction. So yeah, it's a it's a standalone game and an expansion all at once, kind of, depending on where you're at with your Attack on Titan purchasing habits. Yeah, so I have seen the first season of the show, because that's what's on Netflix, basically. I watched it, like, years. I remember watching it when I was, like, sick at home, and I was watching it on Netflix on my Wii U tablet.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and I was like, this is pretty cool. This is pretty cool. Like, yeah, I mean, people own tablets. I get it, but I don't. So just watching it on my Wii U, that was actually a pretty cool way, you know, while I was sick to watch some episodes. But I haven't caught up on the rest of it. I did check out the first game, a bit of that. So I do have some base familiarity with what I was getting into here in terms of both story and the gameplay. The whole gimmick of Attack on Titan is you have your little human world that's being attacked by these creepy ass looking giant naked people with weird looking faces. It's weird. It's creepy. I really enjoyed the first season for its weirdness. And so the idea is humanity fights back because you have these omnidirectional belt gear things that let you like fly. Like, zip around. It's not quite Spider-Man, but, you know, you shoot out grappling hooks, and you zip forward, and you swing on things, and you... It's not quite flying, it's not quite swinging, it's zipping. You zip around, and you use that to combat these giant things that are trying to destroy the human world. That's kind of how it plays out in the game, is you'll have your area. There's areas that are like a bunch of buildings around. There's built areas that are out in fields. You can grapple onto trees to zip around. You know, buildings, there's a lot more to grapple onto. Also, when you're out in the field, like, there's horses. So there's also horses as well. But kind of like the basic loop of things. The game's like a level is structured almost in like a Dynasty Warriors game, which might set up like red flags or green flags, depending on who you are, not in the sense that like, oh, there's like all these creatures all around me and you do like a big slash and you kill 100 guys. Like, no, like the combat is still like one you versus one giant creature, but just kind of in the way that like you have to move around the environment and kind of make your way from objective to objective on a given map, reminds me of, that feel of like a Warriors game where, okay, I'm fighting a battle over here, but now like, oh, this side of the map is in trouble, so I got to run over there and kill some things. But kind of like the basic loop is you will, you know, you're zipping around, you identify a Titan that you want to feck up. You'll fly up, lock on, grapple, select your target on the thing. You can select, you know, like the nape of the neck is where they're most vulnerable. Like smaller ones, you can take out with one shot to that. That's accurate from the show. But you can also, cut off an arm, cut off a leg. That's necessary in some cases against certain larger enemies. You need to kind of wear them down and break them down before you can kill them. Fly up, lock on, grapple to it, select your target, line up like your trajectory. Cause once you grapple on, you'll kind of like whiz around them and you need to line up like a reticle inside of a circle, and then you like let go and you hit A, so you boost inward and then you can slash them and then boom, profit, right? That's how it's all supposed to go. Man, it's the one thing, and this annoyed me about the first game as well, is like I wish that locking on would just grapple a damn line onto the Titan. Like I maybe it's just because I'm stupid. I'm like locking on, and then I'm like, okay, why aren't I whizzing around? It's like, oh right, I have to push the extra button to lay a hook into them and then move around and then do this. It's like, it's pretty involved, I feel like. Like, it's not necessarily like very intuitive or simple. Like, there is a certain complexity to it, but you know, when you get like the feel for it and you're hitting the right angle on something and you zip in, you grab, you lock on, grab them, like zip around, like fly in, hit them, and then you just zip off. Like, it's very nice. Very nice. But, boy, that is kind of the game is doing that a lot over and over again, which is another way that it's like the Warriors games, that it's kind of repetitive. I mean, that's what those games are. They're grindy, repetitive. It depends on how much you enjoy that basic gameplay loop. Something that I believe, and I didn't play the base Attack on Titan 2 game, so I'm not 100% sure on some of the stuff that was there or wasn't there. I believe one of the things they added was some additional weapons, including like some ranged weapons. So they added some more stuff there to spice up your battles. I know there's some maps where you will like build up like supply towers, which you can build up in strategic locations if you need to go resupply, because you need to refill you have limited blades and jet fuel. So there's a bit of strategy there.
What else?
Okay. One of the cool things about like the main story mode, and kind of this stuff bleeds over into the other modes too, is that there's like substantial, like out of combat, like base building gameplay stuff. Like outside of like, okay, I'm building a tower on the map during combat, you have like your home base barracks where you can craft items and you can do social interactions with your other teammates, your squad, to like build up your relationships with them so they're more effective in combat and build up new stuff there. And there's like quite a bit of it, which was definitely not in the first game. I do not, if it was there, man, do I not fucking remember at all. in that first game, I just remember going like, mission. This, it's like, no, you do a mission, then you go back to base, you talk to some people, kind of like the more recent Fire Emblem games in that way. Mm-hmm. That's good stuff. And that's stuff that I like in games. That's going back to like Suikoden's and your Dark Clouds, like having that. Your act trays are really going back to having something to some variety that's not just straight action is always something I enjoy. So that's cool. There is a lot of different ways to play this game. You got your story mode, which kind of goes through the story of the series. And by the way, if you have no familiarity with what the story is of Attack on Titan, don't you worry, they will tell you what's up. you will know for sure that in the year 876, Titans appeared, and then people hid behind walls, and there was three walls, and this is what they were called. But then this one day, the Colossal Titan showed up and kicked a hole in the wall, and then there was an Armored Titan, who, incidentally, his design is based on Brock Lesnar. That's legit.
Really?
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Yep, Armored Titan's design's based on Brock Lesnar. A little bit. Huh. Younger Brock Lesnar, not a older wiener sword on his chest Brock Lesnar. Or your universal champion, Brock Lesnar. Anyways, yeah, so they get that story stuff in there, and there's a mode called, hilariously called, Another Mode. It's just called Another Mode. This is kind of like you just pick your character and they just basically throw you out. This is like where you play with friends, co-op, online. There's like no set story to it. Just go out there and kill some Titans all willy-nilly. There is a character story mode, which follows some of the... in the main story mode, you make like a character. The character story mode, and this is new to Final Battle, I know because it said so when I started up the mode.
Real quick, should we cover the differences with Final Battle?
Hang on, let me do the last couple things and we'll see if I missed anything.
Okay.
So character story, that is new. And that will put you in different scenarios, kind of different perspectives of different characters in the show from different parts in the series. Just like some additional perspective, different missions, stuff like that. And finally, territory Territory Control, which is also, I believe, I don't think that's what the name of the mode is. I just realized that's what I wrote down, and it doesn't sound correct, but it's what you do. But this mode is also pretty cool, like another open-ended mode where the idea is that you're trying to reclaim your territory outside of, I think it's the second wall technically in the story after the first wall has been broken. So it's like you'll identify a point on the map, you use a certain amount of time or charge to move to that place on the map. There's Titans on the map that'll move around too. And so it's like, okay, you can go here. You will go into this area. You'll fight the Titans there, take it over, establish a base. And then there's other actions you can do, which is like, again, social stuff, like researching weapons, moving to different areas. So it's this neat kind of open-ended strategy mode, which seems really cool. And it's definitely not a place where people should start playing. You should definitely play through the story mode first, because they are not shy. And same thing about the character story mode, is they will throw some pretty beefy Titans at you right off the bat in the first mode. As I was kind of like jumping around when I first started playing to kind of see what was what, I was just like, holy shit, I need to build up to this crap. Like, I played like the two tutorial missions in the story where you're fighting wooden Titans, and all of a sudden I'm fighting these giant things that are glowing green. It's like giant abnormal, and I'm like, I don't, oh man.
Oh, this my is, lord.
Okay, we're just going to quit out and play some more story mode. So yeah, what else is different about the final battle that I might have missed or forgot?
Well, I'll go through the paragraph spiel that they have here, is that two new modes have players experiencing the story from all three of Attack on Titan seasons. Yep. Story mode sees players relive seasons 1 and 2, while character episode mode allows players to relive the events from the show's season 3 for the first time via selected characters' points of view.
Yes.
Attack on Titan 2 Final Battle boosts the total number of playable characters to over 40. In addition, the content covering all three seasons of the popular anime series, developers will also include original episodes to create a more fulfilling Attack on Titan experience.
Of course.
So did you feel fulfilled? Yep.
There is no shortage of content in this thing. At all. I mean, really, it's just what it comes down to is there's going to be Venn diagrams of who is interested in this game and who should buy it. Really, it's like I think at the worst, like, this game is still worth trying, because I think the gameplay of whizzing around and taking down, like, you know, one giant creature one on one, you know, which is something I've loved going back to Shadow of the Colossus. It's not quite as spread out as that, but, you know, it's a cool concept. Like, flying around on the machines is pretty neat. It does some neat stuff. It's not just like, it's really not like other action games. Like, the controls can be a little convoluted sometimes, but it's something neat. And even if you're not into Attack on Titan, it's something you should check out. If you are into Attack on Titan, well, I guess it depends on whether or not you bought the second game and you're looking to spend $40 for an expansion, or you're like, hoo-ha, man, I can pay $60 and get this whole package. Because I'm not, you know, I guess you probably know whether or not you should be paying $40 for this. But yeah, if you like the first game and you want more and you waited, then, like, this is a hell of a package, a deal there, like, getting all the second game stuff, all the stuff they added from season 3 and the different modes. Like, there is tons of content here to keep you busy. It's just like, you have to be ready to, like, do that loop of that I described, of like, fly up, lock on, fly around, whiz around, fly in and slash there a lot, because there's a lot of that. Like, it is repetitive, and, you know, they give you plenty of different modes in order to play that out in. I think it all kind of averages out to, like, a try it for most people, like, big Attack on Titan fans who liked the first game and didn't pick up the second one right away. Like, absolutely, you should buy it. Like, it is a very robust game. Yeah, I think that about covers it.
Awesome. So your official verdict is a try it.
I say try it. Yeah, that's the official. And but that's even, you know, again, like I said, even for people that haven't seen Attack on Titan. I mean, I guess if you absolutely hate Attack on Titan, then you don't care at all anyways. But
yeah,
yeah. Even if you're not really familiar with the show, I think it's unique enough to at least give a to at least check it out. Yeah.
Awesome. Sounds good.
All right.
All right. Well, Tim, thank you as always for coming on and doing your thing. We have a lot more show that we have to take care of, so we're going to let you go. Do you have any final words?
Man, I so don't have any final words.
It's almost like I ask this every time.
I know you ask it every time, but then like I don't always think of it like ahead of time or come up with a good joke or something like that. Just I guess I'll just say, you know, again, make sure you tune in for 500. Next week or a week and a half away, however far it is, 2 weeks maybe. Tune in live because it's going to be dope.
All right, moving on, we're bringing in our good friend Pernell Vaughn. Pernell, how are you doing?
I'm doing tired. Jim,
you're doing tired.
Yeah, man, the gym beat the tar out of me today. I don't know what they're trying to do. I think they're trying to kill me, and there's probably some clause in the contract I signed for my membership that says they pretty much get access to all of my my inheritance when I'm gone. I think that's the plan.
They know how many video games you have. We're going to kill this guy.
Going to set him up. Going to walk into his house and just unload just so many games here. I can build a throne with the amount of games I'm sitting on right now, which is kind of scary, but also rather cool, too.
Well, then build a throne, and then you can have a throne of games.
Yeah, but then I'll crush cases because I'm a large whale man, and that's not good for anybody's business. It would look nice, but I can't sit on it. Maybe the board games, but then they would just crease the boxes, and then the shrink would get all mucky. It just isn't good for business. It's only good for aesthetics.
I mean, yeah, but it would look awesome.
Yeah, but then the downside then is you'll have a guest come over, gets a little too drunk. I was like, I'm a Lannister. And just sits down and just smashes up all my stuff. And then I got to kill him. And I don't really have much of a talent in hiding bodies. So that gets problematic at that point. So it's better to resist giving people the temptation to drunkenly crush my wares in a drunken stupor of fame and power. No one's got time for that.
Yeah. Maybe next time.
Maybe next time. Maybe get like a nice little like metallic sealant or something. It just coats around the side, and it's like, now I'm okay. It can withstand the weight.
Oh, but what are we going to do with you, Pernell? What are we going to do with you?
Well, first of all, we need to figure out how to get these darn things to be able to be sat on in a way that won't crush them. That's what we need to do. Because I do agree, it would look awesome, and now I can't get it out of my mind. I want my throne of games. But I'm just afraid. We got to come up with something, Joe. Great minds. There's two minds here, one of which is drunk. We come up with
something. You can guess which is which. Because I don't even know.
See?
And so drunk.
And just think about it. I'm the drunk one, so just listen to Joe. I don't even know what to tell you about that.
Oh man, we should probably talk games, shouldn't we?
I guess so.
Might as well. You got two of them to talk about this week. The first one is called Streets of Rogue, developed by Matt Dabrowski, published by Tiny Build, released July 12th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $19.99. Fight, sneak, and hack your way through randomly generated cities. It's an anarchy-riddled twin-stick roguelite RPG immersive sim that goes completely insane. Pernell, tell us about Streets of Rogue.
Honestly, that description is not a leap. That's actually very true. Though you might not get that impression when you first start the game. Or you might. I don't know. It depends on the player and what your situation is when you boot it up. Because this game has a lot of randomizing in it, but in a good way. So the game starts out with a nice little tutorial where the premise of the plot, there's a plot somehow where there's a mayor of a town called Rogue, who decides that he wants to throw a major party. So he confiscates all the city's alcohol and all of its chicken nuggets, because apparently chicken nuggets are something special in this world. And then he decides to put the city on some form of martial law with the police stomping around. And it's just weird pandemonium. It's the most bizarre plot I can think of in ages. It's been a while since I've come across a plot this weird. But what ends up happening is your character is up joining what's called the Resistance, which is a group that is determined to overthrow this mayor and set things right. So the city that you are exploring is laid out like a roguelike dungeon, as in you're going up from floor to floor, and each floor is a section of the city. So the first few floors are going to be the slums, and the next few floors are like a park, then an industrial zone, and so on and so forth, until you eventually hit the mayor's villa and try to kill him, because that's what murder gets things done in the town of Rome. So typically, you would expect a roguelike to be the usual spiel. You go into the game, you kill a bunch of dudes, you go up floors until you die, and then you resurrect with, you know, a few light carryovers, but otherwise nothing. But what makes this game special, to me anyway, is that the game gives you a variety of objectives each time you boot up and go into each stage. But the primary objective you get is determined by the class you choose at the beginning. So, for example, if I were to choose the thief as a character, then every floor I go on, the game will give me three goals. Like it might say, kill this guy, or rescue this guy, or find these things. And there's also the occasional side mission that's hidden throughout where you have to find a guy. He'll give you the mission if you can find it. But in addition to that, there's what's called the big quest. The big quest is the character-specific goal. So for the thief, it would be crack and rob three chests in a treasure chest and safes throughout the level. That's the goal. So it's pretty much saying, okay, you're a thief. Do something a thief would do every floor. And you also start out with a different loadout. So if I remember correctly, the thief started out with like an item that lets him go through walls, but he can only use it 5 times, and like a crowbar to break walls and heads. and a few other little wacky things, a cardboard box for hiding. No, I'm sorry, that's the soldier. The soldier starts with the cardboard box. I'm Solid Snake. So every character starts with a different objective. Actually, my favorite objective that I've stumbled across, or favorite style of play for Big Quest, is the investment banker. You unlock him by finding a lot of money in one run. And when you do that and you use him, his goal is to stay high as long as possible as you run through the stages. So find drugs, buy drugs, and use them constantly to stay high, which means it's a very chaotic playthrough.
That's amazing. But a
good one. It's really good. There's some ridiculous objectives you can have. You can get a gorilla, and the gorilla's objective is to rescue other gorillas. And one of his traits is that scientists hate him because he's an escaped science experiment. So all scientists will rush him and do like double damage or something like that. So, and he also can't talk to humans. All of his stats are maxed out, but he can't use guns. It's a weird game. And you might think it just seems kind of dumb because, like I said, you have the primary goal of the mayor, and beyond that is just the big quest and whatever goals the game gives you on each floor. But it just feels good to play. Like, you'll be running around, and you'll know what you're trying to do, but you're trying to, like, you know, not be seen when you do stuff. So you might place a bomb next to the side of a building and then run off so when it blows up, no one sees that you did it. And then you'll get experience points for, you know, not being detected when you destroyed something. Or you might I've done things where, like, I'll knock on the door, the guy will come answer, and then when he turns around, I walk in and hit him with the crowbar. It's like, wham! And if you got the perk that does double damage when they're not looking, well, there you go.
Get that backstab.
Yeah, man. And you can get it in this game. There's a lot of cool perks in this game, actually. But the fact that it incentivizes you to come into each environment and play things differently, because most other roguelikes you play, every time you play, it's the same story. You're killing guys, getting new equipment. Like, nothing really changes. Don't get understand it's not fun, but nothing really changes. Whereas in this game, the objective is based on the characters. And they incentivize you to use more than one character, because each time you go to a section, you know, typically in roguelikes, when you get to new sections, you want to be able to unlock a way to warp right to that new area and not have to play through the old areas again to get there. But the way you unlock the subsequent areas in this game is you have to play through the previous one with 5 different characters. So you're going to be working to unlock each zone as a warpable point. But hey, nothing wrong with that. It just means you'll be having a lot of fun playing Streets of Rogue with these different character classes. Mm-hmm. Also, one thing that I think is worth mentioning, which is kind of cool, though, is that it's weird that they even did this, because it feels like cheating, but it's there. And which is that you can warp to any place on the map you want by just going to the map and then clicking on a spot on the map, and it'll warp you there. I don't know why it's like that. I barely mess with it because I feel like it kind of breaks the game. It feels like it would break the game. Like, oh, there's a mission to get in there. I'll just warp inside and take it and leave. Like, why would that be there? But there has to be a reason. I just didn't bother with it because I didn't. I thought it kind of belied the purpose. But it is nice in the sense that if you know you're trying to complete a mission, rather than run all the way across town, you can at least just work close to the mission and then get to work on trying to figure out how to do it, you know?
Yeah.
So I did like that.
Speaking of breaking the game, my favorite part of this entire game were all the mutators.
Yes!
I absolutely love the fact that they included mutators in this game, which can break the game in magical ways. Like, normally your weapons have durability, so you can't just spam, you know, sword attacks the entire level. Well, with this, you can have infinite melee durability, or you can have infinite ammo and weapons, or you can force it so that no one has guns at all. Everything is just melee weapons. Or you can have it so that when you kill someone, their body explodes.
It's just a lot of, and it's interesting because there's another case where, like, the person, the by the books guy in me is like, I need the default game style. Like, what is the way to play the game? How are you supposed to beat this and say, I beat Streets of Rogue? But the person who just wants to have fun is saying, who the hell cares? Play it however the heck you want. Mm-hmm. They give you the options. And you can unlock other mutations too. So you're not even stuck with just what they start you with. There's more mutations.
Yep.
And they get to be a little bit on the ridiculous side too, which again, it spices up the game. There's a ton of variety in this thing. And the best part about it, this is a personal Purnell thing, is that I'm sure there's probably some people looking at the graphics on this and going, this looks stupid. These graphics are weak. But for me, who really loves TurboGrafx games and especially love the game called Dragon Slayer, Legend of Heroes, in which these characters look identical to the characters in that game as far as the pixel style of them, it was right up my alley. I love them. I love the way the characters look, the way they animate, the whole hopping around the map. It is gold to me. I love it. Love it, love it, love it. So it's one of those things where it's like, yeah, it's not pushing any limits, but they decide they'd rather spend that effort making a game that has limit, not, I won't say limitless, but damn near limitless potential on how you interact with it.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to, well, it looks beautiful, but you can only do it in one way. Like, man, screw that. I want to play a game. I don't need an art piece. I need a game. Yeah. So, and this game is that game. I very much have enjoyed it. And suffice it to say, I will be playing it for a square bit because there's tons I have not done. There's tons more that I will want to do. And I haven't even become the mayor yet. I don't even sure if you're even allowed to become the mayor, because every time you meet a floor, there's actually a rating that you get that says whether or not you were electable or not. Like, your electability rating goes down. So it makes me wonder if you can get to the end, beat the mayor, but there's like, well, you've committed so many crimes, no one wants to elect your dumbass, so whatever. So that's an interesting thing. Like, you can play the game by the book and then get to tell us, like, you're the new mayor, aren't you cool? But, oh, and worth mentioning also, the carryover thing for unlocking stuff is the chicken nuggets. When you beat certain missions, you get chicken nuggets, and then you can take those chicken nuggets when you die back to the main hub to purchase new loadout gear that you can have when you start the level. That's a one-time purchase. Or you can purchase items that will become available on your runs, and you can customize what shows up on your run. So there's a minimum of 36 items that can show up, and I think you start out with 36 unlocked. So you start out with just enough to hit the minimum quota. And every time you spend chicken nuggets to unlock a new one, God, it makes me feel weird to say you spend chicken nugget. But you spend chicken nuggets to unlock the next one, and it just increases. But if you want to, you know, cultivate a very specific style of game, you can unlock certain things. You can unlock some stuff and then turn off old stuff that you never felt much, that was very, felt was very useful. And you kind of make the game specifically more like something you want it to be. The items you want to see pop up in the game, like more cardboard boxes. I don't know. This game is golden, man. It's a solid title. It's really good.
Well, then your official verdict for $20?
I'd say it's worth the purchase. It's definitely worth the money. Like I said, some people might be like, oh, I don't know what that costs, man. It doesn't look all that great. I say you get what you pay for in this. It's worth the $20. And even if you wait to get it on sale, it's still worth that too. Just get the damn game. It's a lot of fun.
I agree. I am having a blast with the game, and I look forward to welcoming Matt onto the show in about a week. We should have him on to chat, so that'll be fun.
Yeah, it should be. He better talk. He has to talk a mean game about this thing too.
All right, but you got one other game to talk about. That is called Bouncy Bullets, developed by Petite Games, published by Rattalaika Games, released July 9th on PS4, 10th on Xbox One, 12th on the Switch for $4.99. In a world where the sky is blue and water is pink with icebergs replaced by floating ice cream, Bouncy Bullets is a colorfully vibrant first-person shooter that will task players to traverse wonderful terrains in a bid to reach the portal that awaits them at the end of every level. Purnell, tell us about Bouncy Bullets.
Bouncy Bullets is a game where bullets bounce across bouncy bullet terrain. Hi-yo!
Yay!
Also as a first-person shooter. The way this game is lined up is when you start the game, there are, they call them chapters. And then there's three chapters, and each chapter has about, say, around about 15 stages in it. And those stages have the bump, 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 dreaded three-star rating, the thing Purnell always rants about. But that's how they rate you for completing each stage. And the way you complete these stages is by getting from the start to the goal in as little time as possible. The quicker you beat it, the more likely you are to get 3 stars. So getting across the terrain involves being able to do a few things. You don't get a ton of moves. You can jump, and you can fire 2 different guns. You can fire a gun that fires purple bullets, and you can fire a gun that fires yellow bullets. Purple bullets kill purple enemies. Yellow bullets kill yellow enemies. Yellow bullets break yellow blocks. Purple bullets break purple blocks. You still with me so far? I hope so.
I'm sensing a theme.
There's a theme. Colorful destruction. And there's also some enemies that can't be destroyed, or they can be, but you don't want to. Like, there's like gray enemies, little square, rectangular gray faces, where if you shoot them, you lose the level. So you got to be mindful of that. And there's also black enemies where you can't shoot them directly. You have to actually make the bullet bounce off the ground and then have it ricochet into them. That's the only way you can kill them. So as you're running around these levels, these enemies are shooting bullets at you, and you're dodging them and shooting back at them to try to knock them out. You're not required to kill them. They're just in the way. Your sole goal is to get to the exit as quickly as possible. Now, I like games that just are just meant to be kind of goofy and fun. I like games where it's just abusive use of color palettes. This game does that. It is those things. It's an enjoyable romp, but I did have one major complaint that may well factor into whether people will bother with this or not.
And that
is the controls. Those controls, man. So the idea, like I said, the game is simple. You can only run, shoot, and jump. Like, there's no advanced techniques. There's no air dash or nothing like that. So you would think it'd be pretty easy to control my little run and hop and bop man. But the problem is there are moments when you're trying to hit these times, but the camera turns so slowly, though maybe you fall, though maybe there was a sensitivity option to me that I didn't notice. And if it is, holy cow, I need to go double and do set that up. But turning the guys is really slow, and trying to hit those curves and land those specific jumps to get that time right was driving me crazy. There were a couple levels where in order to hit the 3 stars, I ran it backwards. Like, I didn't have the time to turn around, so I ran backwards and just knew how to count and say 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. And I was jumping blind.
Jeez.
And it's because, like I said, I get obsessed with that damn 3-star rating. I want it. I hate it, but I want it. So I was breaking my balls to pull this off. And you ever play a game where it frustrates you, and yet you find yourself playing it an hour or two later? Nonetheless, you're like, I should have put this down eons ago, but here I am going for that record. Mm-hmm. That was me with Bouncy Bullets. Because, again, I like the color. I like the idea of shoot things with specific colored bullets and manipulating specific actions. And I like, you know, the freaking like candy water and like glaciers and just weird stuff they set up in the game. I like all that. It was just those damn controls. And it inhibited my enjoyment, but it didn't stop me from playing it. So that's like my main gripe, is that it may come down to something as simple as that. It's something that you can hit, if you can tolerate it to the point where you'll buy it for $5 and enjoy the colorful stylings of the game, you'll enjoy this game, because the music is good too. It changes every couple stages. It's nothing to write home about, but it sounds good. It's happy music, bouncy music. It's nice. And I joke a lot about this in real life, as if this is fantasy, but how I wish there were more first-person shooters, or at least first-person action games, that relied more on like colorful worlds. Like, imagine Doom Because there was a game like this back in the day, and I think you're going to remember the name of it, but imagine a game like Doom, but instead of being like hell, it's like Fairyland or something. And you're fighting colorful creatures, crazy unicorns, and fairies, and ants, and all this stuff. And so it's all the action of an FPS, but the entire universe is turned on its side. It's all wacky stuff. That would be amazing to me. But developers will all think the world's at the brink of destruction and only one man can stop it. No, I want to punch unicorns in the face. Is that so much to ask? I think it's a great idea.
It is a good idea.
Pay a fairy money to give you augmentations or just punch her in the face and steal the augmentations. You're in Magic Land, but you can be a brute if you want. But the point is that I like the idea of more games injecting color into them. Everything doesn't have to be doom and gloom. The world's going to end. Whatever. This game gives me that light, boppy, boppy, bouncy feeling. And it's only $5, too. So it's helpful in that regard to say, hey, I'm going to run around with it. Because, I mean, theoretically, you don't even have to get the 3 stars. You can just run the levels, feel good, and go, okay, I did the levels. I saw what they have to offer, and I'm done. The controls are really only going to become an issue for you if you're trying to chase those times.
Yeah.
So.
Well, controls aside, $5 on this one. What's your official verdict?
I think it's a genuine try it because the controls keep me from making the definitive buy it. But like I said earlier, despite the control issues, I didn't put it down for a bit. I played more than I typically would have expected for a game that I could have said, deny it. No, I can't deny a game that I actually enjoyed playing. It wouldn't make sense. So it's definitely a try for me.
Well, is it a strict try it or is it cheap enough to be a fuck it? Why not?
I want to give it a try it actually because fuck it, why not is there. But I feel like at least in this instance, it deserves a little bit more than that. It could definitely be a genuine buy it and see if you dig it.
Cool. Sounds good.
Bouncy, baby. Bouncy.
Oh, Purnell, it is always a pleasure having you on chat. And do you have any final words?
Stay in shape, because if you don't, all some of the simplest mess, man, will put you under. I swear. Something as simple as touching your toes are going to give you a heart attack. 3 heart attacks. Would never have thought it. I don't know. But at the same time, food tastes really good. So maybe jog while eating a pizza or, I don't know, climb a ladder with a cheesesteak. I don't know. But try to get some exercise in there, because if you don't, it's going to be problematic. That's my story.
All right, next game to talk about is called Lethal League Blaze, developed and published by Team Reptile, released July 12th on Xbox One, Switch, and PS4 for $19.99. Lethal League Blaze is an intense high-speed ball game with unique characters, out-of-sight sounds, and none of that weak shit, rated E10.
That's right.
In Shine City, the anti-gravity ball game has long been illegal. The group who kept playing was dubbed the Lethal League. Even now, with their sport pushed underground, players and crews compete in the league for challenge and respect. Giggling his way through that one, Royal Sefton, how are you doing?
I'm sorry, man. I totally tripped you up.
Hey, reading is hard.
None of that weak shit. I love that. Yes,
I love that's in the write-up.
Yes, that is the actual byline on the website and everything, and it's true.
And it's rated E10 for everyone 10 and up.
Yep, as long as they can stand to hear the word shit.
So what is Lethal League Blaze?
So it's a quasi-fighting game / ball game, right? And I full disclosure, I had Lethal League, the original, and never played it. It was part of a bundle, I think.
Oh, you missed out.
Steam. Yeah, and I did. That's what I found out when I discovered this. Like, hey, that's where I've seen this. It's one of the 600 games I haven't played yet, you know? the concept is fairly simple and kind of fighting game-like, but without a lot of complexity or combos or anything. Instead, you're batting this quasi-gravity-defiant ball around, so kind of like playing, you know, Mortal Pong or something. You hit this ball, changes to a color that matches your designation. Like if the ball is red, then player one's the last player to hit it. If it's blue, player two's the last player to hit it, so on. And if you don't hit the ball back, but instead get hit by the ball, you lose health and or get knocked out, depending on how fast the ball is going. And as you pong it back and forth, it gains velocity and just becomes that much more intense. And conceptually very simple, but there is still, like, it's one of those games that you could probably spend 15 minutes picking it up, but you could spend 150 hours getting good at it.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, easy intro, but so much depth, a surprising amount of depth to a game where basically you have hit the ball and hit the ball special move, which varies from one character to the next. That's pretty much it. Well, you could put a little English on the ball. Like, you can bunt it, and that'll just hit it up, take the velocity away from it temporarily, and then you can knock it again. Or, like I said, you can catch, or you can also catch it. That's sometimes there's a special move that with some of the characters that you can kind of catch it and throw it differently. Or I think anybody can catch it by pressing Y on the Xbox pad, something like that. But yeah, it's surprising just how much depth this game makes out of so little. On top of that, you have these occasional like power-up type things that show up. There's this target starts drifting back and forth up at the top of the arena. Knock it into that, and you can end up with things like a football where the trajectory and the bounce is very hard to predict where it's going to land next, or
a healing ball. Like,
yeah, the healing ball or the instant screw your shit up ball, you know, the one that you launch, it goes like 500 miles an hour and just takes you
wrecked
out.
Me so bad with that thing.
That was awesome. Oh, God. And obviously, you can tell by the laughter, it's a lot of fun.
Very fun. Yeah,
dude, I crack up playing it. It's like the last game we played that was this much fun was probably Ultimate Chicken Horse. And that is high praise. Ultimate Chicken Horse is also another one of those great multiplayer games. Simple, but you can obviously take it in some great directions there, and you can get really good at it over time, and there's still more to learn. But yeah, you get some different characters, and besides their aesthetic differences, some of the favorites from the first game I understand are back. Like I recognized Candyman. They all have different special moves. Some that change the way the ball behaves. Some where they can throw it through the wall and it wraps around. Or there's one where you can catch it, bring it back to you, and then launch it again. Just really interesting stuff where you kind of develop a preference for the character of your choice. I found the Latch. The lizard man, he's a badass. I love using him.
Yeah. I'm a fan of Candyman. I liked him in Candyman's the first hilarious. Game. So
yeah.
Anytime definitely. You get hit and he screams out, "Damn it, damn it, damn it!"
Yes, and as you knock them out, they all have fun things to say. And also you can taunt, but be careful about when you taunt. I've learned the hard way that you could throw a taunt out there. And you'll freeze up just long enough to have a ball upside the head. So
yeah.
Yeah. So this game will punish you for talking smack at the wrong time. But it's a single and multiplayer game. The multiplayer game is really the game you come for. The single player game is kind of neat. There's a versus mode where you can square off against CPU. There's a story mode where there's some amount of world building, and it's kind of neat. I don't feel like that's the reason to play the game. I don't feel like that's the true experience. But it's kind of neat that there's so much thought and world building that goes into it, and it gives you an opportunity to kind of get to understand the characters a little better, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of neat, you know. It's fun. But the multiplayer game is really where it's at, for sure.
Yeah, and I love the fact that it has online. Being able to play with you the entire country away is always fun.
Absolutely, and it seemed like it was pretty responsive. I mean, the game, it will penalize you for being a few milliseconds off sometimes, and it didn't really feel unfair or laggy to me, and I wasn't even the one hosting. I was the one, you know, joining the game, and it felt really crisp.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely something to praise. So now with some games, it's like when you have that many hops between you and your opponents, and you know that 20, 30 second millisecond ping could make a big difference when you're trying to hit the ball back when it's coming at you at 100 miles an hour.
Oh yeah.
So yeah, no, they did a good job of handling that, especially. And so you get this constant game of escalation as the ball just keeps getting faster and faster until somebody just gets knocked the fuck out. It's awesome. But on top of that, I also got to give praise to the soundtrack. The sound design in general is just really good. And they handpicked a lot of really interesting music for it, too. It's a lot of fun.
Nice. So overall, $20 on Lethal League Blaze. What are your thoughts?
Oh, dude, I think it's an insta-buy. It would be pretty hard to say, yeah, you might just want to try it first, but it's fair with every game. But for $20, I think it's just a huge amount of fun. If you're willing to get in there and play online, especially, you'll get your money out of it and then some.
Awesome. Sounds good. All right. Well, Royal, always a pleasure having you on chatting about this stuff while you're in an abandoned parking lot, presumably with someone just around the corner with a knife ready to shank you.
In 114 degree heat, no less.
Sweet. Get inside, turn the air conditioner on, and do you have any final words?
Reptile wins.
All right, moving on. Our good friend Jacob Garner is here. Jacob, how are you doing?
You called me a friend again.
Yeah, I did. Live with it. You're stuck with it. You're associated with me forever.
I know. It's on my fucking LinkedIn profile.
You poor bastard.
It's sad.
It is. That's depressing. So how are you?
I'm doing generally well. It's summertime, so I'm avoiding the outside because, you know, extreme heat and I'm fat, so you know, I don't like Niagara Falls going down my ass crack.
Agreed.
Yeah. you don't like Niagara Falls going down your ass crack or my ass crack?
Yes.
Joe, I'm touched. I mean, you care about the well-being of my nasty-ass back hair and how much moisture it's receiving. Joe, that's touching. Touching God. In more ways than I'd prefer that you didn't.
Gross. That's... Oh, God.
So, yeah.
I can't stop thinking about it. Oh, my God.
Perhaps we should discuss video game related stuff.
I could taste it.
Why?
Oh man, I don't know.
You know what? There we go. That's how we're gonna make money. Like, you know that like gamer girl that's selling her bathwater?
Oh God.
we'll sell vials of our back sweat. And just like threaten our subscribers. Send us money, otherwise we'll send this to you.
Oh my God. Isn't that like chemical warfare?
Not unless we include like taint sweat as well.
Oh, Jesus.
I mean,
all right, this conversation also is going way far off the rails. we gotta rein this back in.
Okay. Well, the Xbox summer sale's on.
What are you getting?
I don't know. I'm not that impressed with it. I mean, it's like, it's a lot of the stuff that usually goes on sale for the usual same prices. And it's just like, I'm kind of disappointed. I mean, there's there's a couple of indie titles that I'm eyeing up, but it's just like, first off, I don't remember what they are.
That's really helpful when you're looking to buy stuff.
Well, it's just like, I was looking through the titles when I was on my lunch break today at work. And it was just like, oh, it's a ton of AAA titles I either already own, they're too new to actually have like a meaningful discount. Like, oh boy, I could spend $99 on the full blown version of Mortal Kombat 11. You know,
well, that's normal price, isn't it?
No, I thought that was sale.
No, because I bought the premium for $100.
Oh, I don't know. Maybe it's like 84 or something like that.
Oh, maybe. You know,
yeah. Like, it's like, okay, well, I guess I'll be waiting for a few years for this game.
Yeah, that's how it always is. You can't expect brand new games to be $20 after a month.
Yeah, I know, but I'm like, I'm not asking for $20, but, you know, it might be nice if it was like 40 or 35, you know, especially for a digital-only copy, you know. But yeah, it was really just like, oh, there's a couple of indies, like, and I'm thinking of just picking up Crackdown 3.
How much is it?
It's 30, which is the normal sale price for it. But I got rid of Game Pass because honestly, like, at this point, because thankfully for that digital hard drive that you gave me, like, I've got, instead of only being able to choose from like 20 games on my hard drive, I could choose from like 90, 95, you know, games. So it's kind of right now I kind of don't need Game Pass just because it's just like I now have access to my full backlog whenever I feel like it.
Yeah, that's always helpful.
Yeah. And so it's just like I got rid of Game Pass, and really playing Crackdown was really only one of the reasons. And it's like I'm not going to spend like $15 a month to spend, you know, on just play just so I could have Crackdown 3. You know,
yeah,
when I could spend 30 on it, like 2 months worth of Game Pass for it. I don't know. I'm sitting on like, I think $40 worth of credit, partially due to like all the Bing rewards I do.
But nice.
Yeah, doing those every single day is like stupidly easy. You can easily get like $5. I don't want to say weekly, but like every other week at least.
It adds up. Definitely adds up.
But were you going to get anything from the sale? Oh, also, I was disappointed. There's, like, no SNK stuff on the sale.
Yeah, well. I have my eyes on that 11-11 game. Like, that war adventure game.
Yeah, I've got that on my wish list.
It's only $9.
That's not bad.
Instead of 30.
I was going to say, I thought it was, like, 20, 25.
And then I was in an altered state last night, and I bought Paw Patrol for $20.
I thought that was like 27 on sale.
No, it was 24. But I had $3 sitting on my account not being used, so it was basically 20.
All right. And how's the game?
I haven't played it yet.
You need to review it. You realize this.
We'll see.
Come on.
It'll we have a lot of reviews to take care of anyway. Actually, we should probably get to your review.
Holy crap. All right. All right. We'll get to Knocked in a minute.
Jesus.
Here's what you need to do. Like, write to the publisher, get me a code for Paw Patrol.
We actually were turned down reviewing it because it was intended for younger audiences and not for people of our age to review it, which I totally understand.
They want
their game to be taken seriously and not have dick jokes made about it during the review.
I would not make a dick joke during a Paw Patrol review.
Bullshit.
Which I feel, first off, I feel like that's like a new, like that's a campaign slogan right there. Vote for Gardner 2020. He won't make dicks during a Paw Patrol game. So, Knocked.
Knocked, True Tales of Robin Hood, developed and published by Andrew G. Snyder, released July 17th on Steam for $19.99. You are Robin Hood. Forge your destiny and fight to liberate Nottingham in this epic story-driven RPG blending interactive fiction, resource management, and base building set within a lushly illustrated Sherwood Forest. I can't talk today. I've been doing this way too long. And it's your fault that you made me go 9 minutes before even starting this review. So tell me about it.
My name's Joe.
How is Knocked on Steam?
As many of our longtime listeners may remember, years ago, which I'm estimating to be like, what, two?
Something like
two,
that.
2 or 3 years ago, I actually reviewed Knocked for iOS. And I remember I gave it a pretty good review, at least good enough to get quoted on the Steam page for Knocked.
Yeah, which is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool, even though, you know, my own name isn't given. But hey, you know.
Bitch.
The SML podcast, you know, we finally got quoted on something, you know, that wasn't a bathroom wall telling people for a good time where they should call. So it's pretty much a text adventure. When I was playing it on iOS, you know, it, like, of course, like, the screen's pretty scrunched. But it was still manageable with, like, you know, telling you what to do, where to go, and the resource management aspect of that game. And now that it's on Steam, like, there's now, like, a nice layout. That, you know, in the center, of course, you still have your text, but on the sides, you get nice art that changes pretty much with almost every decision, whether it's like what characters you're facing, what location you're in, and of course the music changes with it. And I'll be honest, I don't recall whether there was music in the original version of Noct. If there was, it was, you know, it was not memorable.
I don't think there was music on the iOS version. At least I don't remember it either.
I thought it was very simple. Like I thought it was like insanely basic, but I should have re-downloaded Noct, to check out that on, like, to compare the iOS versus Steam before this review. But of course I didn't do my homework.
Schmuck.
Hey, you know, I get quoted, you know, it all goes to my head. You know, I just figure I'm going to get quoted again. You know how it works. So the music really, like, you know, it changes with the scenes. You know, sometimes it could be more lighthearted. Sometimes it could be very dramatic, and it really fits. And everything just meshes really well together on this. And the story is just as engrossing. I mean, I didn't notice any changes to it. But again, it's also been a bunch of years. And of course there's multiple pathways that you can take throughout the story. And I think that the resource management, like, it was easy to figure out then. It's still really easy to figure out, but you now have a nice sidebar that always tells you, like, this is how much renown you have. These are how many men you have in your army. This is how much gold you have. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Having all that info on screen at all times helped out a lot.
It really did, because then you could really make, it really helped making snap decisions, even though the game, like, lets you take your time in him and haw sometimes, over, you know, what you're going to do next. It really led to a faster paced story, whether that was intentional or not. And I think it really helped. I really appreciated Noct when it first came out, because it's pretty much a book that you just got to read on your iPhone, like, while you're on a commute or something like that. But I feel like Steam is a much better platform for it, especially with previous visual novels that I've had to review, like that Vampires. What is it called? Vampires the Masquerade?
It might have been.
And then it came with like a second one, which I don't even remember what the name of it was. But it just works. Like, it felt right. Like, and it was just a joy to just sit there, and just play through it. I don't know. Like, does it make sense? Like, what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, it feels at home being on a gaming platform instead of just being on a phone.
Right, and like having to be scrunched over your phone, you know, playing it. And it's just like, of course, when you're playing something on your phone, generally you're not playing it for hours on end. This one, you know.
Yeah, you can get engrossed and you could sit there for a couple hours at a time playing through it.
Exactly. So yeah, I was really pleased with this version of Noct. I'm definitely like, I don't really have any complaints about the game itself. I mean, like, if you like text adventures, or visual novels, this is going to be right up your alley. If you're expecting like amazing graphics, that's just not going to be found here. Like, you're not
getting. That's not the point of that game. So.
Right. You know, you're not getting, you know, Assassin's Creed or Call of Duty level graphics. You know, it's simple, but it fits the motif very well. My really only complaint is that I think the price is a tad steep.
Yeah, the game is $20 on Steam. Originally, it was, I believe, $5.99 on iOS, if I'm remembering properly.
You'd have to look that up, because I have it. So
yeah,
the Mac store won't tell me however much it is.
Yeah, I think it was $5.99.
Yeah, and it's just like, I'd be more okay with like 10, maybe 12 bucks for this. 20 bucks is a tad bit steep. It's still very much a game I recommend, and I definitely check it out. But, you know, as I said, 20 bucks seems a bit much. However, I literally had no problems with the game. So
your overall verdict for 20 bucks?
My verdict, I mean, is it's as I said, if you're definitely a fan of the genre, go for it. If you're kind of like on the fence post about this kind of game, maybe wait for a Steam sale. But
makes sense.
But I definitely recommend it. It's one of the games that I'm just like, absolutely go ahead and buy.
Awesome. Sounds good.
Yeah. I mean, it was a solid game then. It's a solid game now. And the improvements are definitely worthwhile improvements.
Yeah, I agree. It's still a lot of fun to play. It gave me a chance to make some choices I didn't make the first time through. So getting to replay, it's always a little bit fun. I'm worried about the price as well. I think maybe $12.99, $14.99 might have been a bit easier to swallow than $19.99, but I don't know what goes into the pricing of games, so I can't really judge that too much.
Well, and that's the other thing too, because it's obviously had a lot more work put into it.
Oh, yeah.
Because if I remember correctly, the original version of Nox was all a one-man show, I think. And I think some of it may have been outsourced, or he may be working with other people in his team. And so, I mean, that could have led to the costs for it, which, I mean, when you put that into the equation, I guess it's more understandable, but yeah. It still seems like, when you first look at it, there seems to still be like a kind of like, whoa, like it's $6 on iOS versus 20 on Steam. Yeah. You know what I mean?
I agree. But all right, sounds good. Jacob, always a pleasure having you on chatting about this stuff. Do you have any final thoughts before we move on?
I don't know. I could talk about how I'm playing Arkham Asylum.
You were so bad at final words.
I know.
All right, and finally tonight, we're bringing in our good friend Chris Taylor. Chris, how are you doing?
Hey, doing pretty good.
How was your weekend?
Oh, pretty uneventful. Although today was pretty eventful because I finally, in the mail, got my limited run of Toe Jam and Earl back in the groove.
Oh.
Yeah, finally, after 4.5 years since I backed the Kickstarter and then also, I guess, backed the limited run edition as well.
Nice.
But yeah, I gave away all my download codes because I was like, well, I'm getting a physical edition. And then I got the physical edition like 4 months after. I had to wait extra long. But I finally have it, and so all is well in the world.
Hooray!
My cat is celebrating by scratching his post.
My cat is celebrating by sleeping next to me and not doing anything, thankfully, because she's been annoying so much today.
Oh yeah, that's how they do.
Just hops up on her little stool and meow, pay attention to me. Hey,
yeah.
Pay attention to me.
Yeah, they annoy you until they're out of energy.
Yeah, and then they sleep.
Yep.
Oh, man. So games, we should probably cover those, huh?
Oh, yeah, sure, for sure. You got the ones I purchased.
You got three of them to talk about tonight. The first one is called Nelly Kudelot, The Foul Fleet. Developed and published by Application Systems Heidelberg, released July 11th on the Switch for $19.99. Pirate heroine Nelly Kudelot takes on the villainous Baron Widebeard in this point-and-click adventure game. Meet a hilarious cast of characters, including Tom Baker of Doctor Who, and face perplexing challenges in your search for the treasure of the Seventh Sea. Chris, tell us about Nelly Kudelot.
Okay, Nelly Kudelot. Yeah, this is a point-and-click adventure, and, you know, starring who actually is described in the description to the first game as a stupidly named pirate. But, that's kind of like the theme of the whole humor of these games, is that, It's very, very British humor.
Nice.
Very much like recalls, you know, my favorite point and clicks, which are the Discworld games, which also had, at least in the first game, had a Doctor Who in them.
Really?
But those, yeah, they had John Pertwee. Well, the first one had John Pertwee, who's the third Doctor, and this game has the fourth Doctor. So definitely keeping up in that tradition, yeah. So yeah, Nelly Kudelot is the kickstarted sequel to the first game, which was called Nelly Kudelot Spoonbeaks Ahoy, and that was developed by a comedian and filmmaker called Alasdair Beckett King, who made the game presumably mostly by himself, I guess. And yeah, it was just a free download point and click that you can actually still go get for free or like pay like a buck or two on Steam and get it. But this one, yeah, is a fully fledged like pseudo 3D sequel. That is to say, the characters, particularly Nelly Kudelot, look like they're from like a coloring book, just like a children's book, essentially. But once they actually start moving around in the game, you can kind of see that they're actually 3D characters. They just look really good and kind of, you know, when they're standing still, they look flat. So that's kind of nice. And, yeah, as soon as you start playing the game, though, you realize that this is very much not a children's game so much. You know, you end up, you know, like, ordering drinks at a, what do they call it? The Toff races. where disgraced aristocrats run on treadmills to, like, you know, to do a kind of race thing, and that's, you know, that's just one of the stages in the game. It's one of those where you basically use one stick to walk around freely, and with the right stick you you can manipulate a cursor to go and, you know, search for clues. Thankfully, this is a modern point and click, so you can actually just hold the X button down and it will show you all the clues that you can look at on the screen. You just push B to look at it and hear a description of it, and then you push A to interact with it if possible. You push Y to like access your inventory and then select something from the inventory and then interact with the with a thing. Or instead of doing that, you can just scroll through items in your inventory with the shoulder buttons. So it has all the modern amenities of a good Switch point and click, which is really good to me. And this one actually has something I've never seen in any video game that I can recall, and that is it has a level-by-level commentary track from Alasdair and the voice of Nelly, who identifies herself as Rachel. If you go to a certain area and it shows up on your like little top menu, I don't actually know how to access it with buttons. I just use the touchscreen. but if you play it, then it'll actually, you know, it'll show the location and you tap it, and then the creator and the actor will just like start talking about the making of the game and the making of certain stuff.
So I've seen actually, a few games have commentaries like that. That's really cool that they included one in this.
Yeah, and I like it. And, you know, it's definitely beneficial to this game because as much as I looked up the game, I also looked up Alasdair. If you look him up on YouTube, he's a really funny stand-up comedian. He's also, like I said, he's got writing credits. You know, he's done a lot of stuff. Like, he has, like, a pretty good little IMDb page. And his story is that he developed the first game as a gift for his girlfriend and it just got way out of control. And so, like I said, he went to Kickstarter and got the second game funded like about 5 years ago or so. And I think it's just been living on Steam for maybe a year or two. And so they finally brought it over. But yeah, like it's basically like a point and click. It's all about getting from one room to the other, like figuring out what things you need to grab and combine and like how you need to interact with everything. It's thankfully not so British in the sense that things tend to make a little bit of sense. you know, although there is item combining going on here. So I suspect probably towards the end, it's got some real, you know, head scratchers. But, you know, typically whenever I've been playing through these games, the thing that most thwarts me is, like, that the simple solution is just to walk a little further left and then, you know, have the screen scroll because I didn't know there was more screen. But, and, you know, this is very much like that. But, yeah, what I basically, you know, to set this apart from other point and clicks, I would just say the sheer Britishness of it and the fact that it does have some really high quality voice actors. These are people who I think at least three of the actors are in the newer radio drama to The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. So
nice.
Yeah, we're dealing with some high grade stuff for some low grade humor. They mentioned themselves that there's a ton of puns in this game, so, and it's very true. But yeah, this is absolutely a delightful game to just look at everything and listen to every comment because it's all really high quality, you know, in terms of writing and performing. So
nice. So overall, $20 on Nelly Kudelot, The Foul Fleet. What do you think?
Yes, I say go for it. For sure. Like, this is definitely like the production in it alone makes it worth, you know, the money. And the fact that it's not like a $50 game with like a physical release is actually, you know, more beneficial than it being, you know, any cheaper.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. It, a lot of love and care went into this game clearly. And I think that it's definitely worth picking up, for that price. So, yeah, don't let the visuals fool you. It's not like a children's game or something. Cause I feel like people will look at the character and they'll look at like the title and not know what it is. And then look at a $20 price tag and skip. Don't do that. Actually, check this one out.
I'll have to. I wasn't too sure what this one was going in, but after hearing you talk about it, I'm going to have to pick this one up.
Oh, yeah. I love, I just love British smart-assy comedy, and this has definitely got lots of it, so.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
All right. Well, next game to talk about is called Super Mutant Alien Assault, developed by Cybernate, published by Fellow Traveler, released July 12th on the Switch for $9.99. The Citizen Kane of Super Crate Box clones dance with death through randomized rooms to clear your space freighter of irradiated aliens in a brutal arcade platformer shooter stuffed to the brim with unlockable weapons, explosives, special abilities, and defense moves. And that's a really long sentence.
It just runs on and on and on.
It did. It wouldn't end. I even breathed in the middle of it, and it didn't end. Chris, tell us about Super Mutant Alien Assault.
Super Mutant Alien Assault. It's actually hard to remember. Well, I knew by the title I had to play it, because who wouldn't play a game called Super Mutant Alien Assault? Okay, so this one is a room-by-room platforming shooter, I guess you could call it. Oh, that's my stupid phone. let me turn that down.
It's like, I don't know that sound. That's a new one.
Do-do-do. I always... It only rings when I forget to, like, turn it down. Anyways. So, yes. 2D platforming shooter. So, you star as... well, one of three robots, or four robots, rather, but the other three are locked. So... But you're basically like a little guy, just a little, you know, head tall sprite. And basically they put you in a room, and this is, you know, part of a spaceship, which has been, you know, overrun by aliens, the story to it, which actually it's got a pretty cool little cinematic like intro that I quite liked. Definitely got the hype up, but, yeah, it's, you know, these spaceships, in different galaxies, there's three different ships, three different galaxies. And each one contains, like, you know, space sleeping, like, crew. Like, the crew is kind of frozen in that deep space sleep like they do in sci-fi.
Yeah.
And so you're the defense droid, and you have to protect the ship from aliens as they bust in through the walls. And, yeah, like I said, it goes from room to room for a total of four rooms per ship. And they're kind of arranged randomly. I don't think that they're random levels. I think that it's just... it. Goes to different setups each time. And, you know, if you die once, then you have to start that galaxy all over again. So basically, you start with nothing. You only have a jump that you can do. And somewhere located in the one room where you're jumping around is a weapon crate. And then you go to the weapon crate and press A to access it, and it gives you a random weapon from a selection of weapons that gets wider and wider as you keep playing. Could be a rocket launcher, could be a shotgun, could be a machine gun, It just tells you how much ammo you have, and then you have the gun, and then there's a, and then soon you unlock grenades, which there'll be a second box for grenades. And, you know, they by default have the buttons mapped to the R&L buttons, for shooting and grenading, but I actually put them to the bumper buttons because that just made more sense. It lets you fully customize your controls, which I really like. So yeah, you basically run around, and then as soon as you prep, basically the enemies start coming in, and then you just have to defeat like a few waves of them until it finally says finish them, and then once you do, it counts you down to the next stage. Sometimes the enemies drop energy capsule kind of things, and with those you later unlock a special move, and then you know you just keep unlocking special moves as you continually play the game. And they'll do things like, you know, you've got one that's a laser barrier that kind of bumps away the enemies and does some damage to them so that you can kind of get some breathing room, whereupon you can then shoot them. And actually, you know, some of the guns are really cool. Like, there's one in particular, it's a gun that shoots from both sides simultaneously. So, that's really good in a pinch. And anyways... and then, like I said, the grenades, they have a timer grenade, they have one that's, that you manually, shoot, and then they also have what's called, defense moves, like I think the first one that you unlock is a dash, which lets you dash from place to place, and those are, like, infinite ammo type things. But yeah, basically, like, as you run out of ammo with your guns, you just, you know, the weapon crate's on a timer, so as soon as it's done, then you can go pick up a different weapon. Even if you haven't run out of your weapon, it'll just make it switch. And then eventually you get access to sidearms, which are infinite ammo guns, but until you get those, you actually have nothing unless you have, like, a gun with limited ammo. And yeah, like I said, the game basically kind of, you know, takes on different shapes as more and more stuff gets unlocked. Like, and then I think eventually you earn the right to actually choose a starting weapon as well. And then, of course, you know, the fourth room of every galaxy is a boss. And, you know, the bosses are fairly simple. But here's the thing. You unless you go through these levels and find a like a medical station, which operates just like the others, it's on a timer. And every time you access it, you you restore a heart. Of which I think your character has like 6. And yeah, but the hearts don't refill between stages. So if you had a particularly difficult stage, you might end up at the boss of the galaxy / ship with only like 1 heart left. And then therefore you know, might easily die. Yeah, exactly. So it's all about like not only getting, you know, clearing those rooms, but also, you know, there's a little bit of luck involved, and there's also, of course, a survival aspect there too. And then, once you've done all those challenges, then it looks like it has an unlockable endless mode where you can just keep going. So, like, lots of stuff there. I like the visuals. It's very colorful, like, small sprite based. You know, definitely looks like, just a really good, I'd just say a good indie game. Like, it doesn't have any throwback retro system that it looks like or anything like that. Maybe Super Nintendo. The soundtrack is actually really interesting, too, because it's mostly just really hard-hitting, like, dubstep-type sounding stuff. Lots of, like, industrial noise and things like that. Nice. So, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. Sounds great on some, you know, with some earbuds or headphones or, like, a good system.
Nice.
So yeah, overall it's pretty good and polished. It's a simple game, but it widens in a really satisfying way, so it's definitely one that you just keep going back to every time you die, which is numerous times.
Well, then $10, what's your verdict?
$10, that's pretty much the perfect price for a game like this. It's definitely not like one of your super budget titles, but then it by no means is like a, you know, a fully fledged, like, or, you know, it's not the kind of game that would get any more than $10. So I think that's pretty much right in line. So I would say, yeah, go ahead and get it. If you are into action platformers with a, you know, with a little bit of an edge.
Nice.
Yeah.
All right, we got one final game to talk about tonight that is called Pick a Pix Color 2, developed and published by Lightwood Games, Released July 9th on PS4 and Vita for $7.99, the popular Picture Crossword series is back for seconds. Pick-a-Pix is a picture logic game, sometimes known as Picross, where whimsical pixel art pictures are created by solving puzzles. So many P's in there. Oh, my Lord.
The alliteration is strong with this one.
Oh, man. Pick-a-Pix, picture puzzle, Picross with pixel art pictures. Oh, geez.
They did that on purpose.
They did. They're just trying to mess with me. So Chris, tell us about Pick-a-Pix Color 2.
All right. So I checked, and actually I actually covered the first game in this series before on PS4, so I actually got to play them side by side.
Nice.
And kind of tell what the difference was. You know, spoilers, not much. So Pick-a-Pix Puzzle 2, I guess that's what it's called, like its predecessor, and there's another P word for you, it's basically, like it's Picross. So you have a grid, let's say a 10 by 10 grid, because they start you off on 10 by 10 grids, and they go up to like 15 and then 20. So the grids have numbers on the top of the grid and on the left side of the grid, and these numbers will indicate to you not only how many squares you need to have filled on the line that on, like, you know, so like the there's a, let's say there's a 5 and a 2 on the top line of the, you know, first row, and that means that you need to have 5 squares filled in that are connected, and then a space, and then 2 more somewhere in that 10. So given that that's a total of 7, that means there's, you know, only so many ways you can mess that up. The other side, of course, is that on the other grid, it tells you, you know, where you might need 1 or 2 or 3 or whatever. And that kind of, so it's all about kind of zeroing in and triangulating and trying to figure out where exactly these blocks need to go. And of course, what this game adds to it is that there's an element of color. So if it's a red 5, that means it needs to be 5 red blocks going down. And then, you know, maybe 2 black ones. And then, you know, sometimes it'll actually utilize all 10. So it'll be like 5 red ones, and then 1 blue one, and then 2 black ones, and then like 3 blue ones or something like that. Well, actually 2 more blue ones, but a total of 10. So then you know that that's the order that they go in. Therefore, you can actually fill that line in accurately and then kind of work from there. So it takes a little bit of practice. The game actually gives you a nice little 10 screen demonstration and explains it step by step, where somebody like me who had never played a Picross game before was actually able to manage and, you know, get through several puzzles. This one has the exact same tutorial. I checked. Like word for word and graphic by graphic. It's the exact same thing. So this one has,
if it ain't broke, don't fix it, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean that, you know, same thing with, do we ever figure out it's Paugi, right? The other puzzle maker that, okay. Yeah. Like with Paugi, they very much are into, keeping things consistent. Let's call it. So yeah, like basically the only things like between this and the prior game, you know, like I said, you get, you know, several puzzles. Like I said, it's like, you know, a screen's worth of 10 by 10s, and then like 2 screens worth of 15 by 15s, and then like another few screens worth of 20 by 20s. So I didn't count how many puzzles, but it, you know, it's a lot. This will really keep you busy. And like I said, you know, with these kind of games, it's like, you really have to use a lot of, like, kind of brain power and concentration to really, you know, get it, because it's very easy to get lost. But fortunately, this game comes with a fix-it feature where you can basically push the triangle button, and it will tell you whether, you know, it'll tell you if there are any mistakes on the board currently and the number of mistakes. Now, if you use this feature, you can use it as many times as you want and then eventually get it. You know, obviously there's only one solution to every puzzle, so, you know, you'll eventually figure it out, or, you know, there's no way to guess, let's just say.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so basically if you use the clues, you know, if you use even one clue, you don't get a medal on the puzzle when you're done with it. But if you start it all over then and don't use a clue, then you can get it. So it's a... you know, and it's no big deal, really. I mean, if you solve the puzzle, you solve the puzzle.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, oh,
and I just checked. There's 150 puzzles.
Okay, that makes sense. Yeah. So
there's a shitload of content.
Yes. Exactly. And I was gonna say, yeah, it was somewhere over 100. But so you know, there's a clue system that basically lets you you know, fix your problems, which is good. And, you know, if you don't have to, you get the metal system. There's one thing. This is such a slight change, but I promise you, I went over both games with a fine-tooth comb to look for differences. in the options menu, the first one had colorblind mode, which let you adjust all of the colors to something that you can, you know, that you would be able to tell apart if you're colorblind, which is a great feature. I mean, that's really considerate of them. This one just says fix colors. Just, you know, just lets you set the colors, doesn't say anything about being colorblind.
But it's the same thing?
Yeah, it's the same exact feature. Oh, they okay. just called it something different this time.
All right.
and yeah, even, well, I didn't test it out too thoroughly, but the soundtrack to the second one seems like it has more songs, but it does have the same songs too. Like, there's one song that I really, really liked from the first game, and when I heard it in the second game, I was like, oh yeah, there it is. Which is pretty cool. So yeah, this is very much like just an update with more puzzles on the first game's formula. So, I can't fault it for that because the first game was pretty much perfect. So,
so you can't go wrong with this one either. So $8, yeah, your verdict?
Yeah, $8. If you like the first one, then go get this one. If you, you know, if you haven't played the first one, then just close your eyes and pick one. They're both pretty much the same game with different puzzles. So, and they're very, very fun puzzles to play. So I would recommend one or both of them.
Nice. And Lightwood, I'm still waiting for some Xbox love.
Yeah. Get it.
All right. Well, that is it for this episode. Thanks again to God friggin' everyone ever for coming on this episode.
Oh, wow.
We had Lucia and Aleish coming on to chat about Professor Lupo. We had Cole there with that as well. We had Tim come on for his review, Purnell for his review, Jacob for his, Royal for his, you for yours. It's been a long episode.
Extra large.
Hey, it's that countdown to 500. Shit's getting busy.
Hells yeah. That's what, 10 days from now? 10 days from this recording?
Yes. We are so close. So,
nice.
Yeah, that is it for this episode. Thanks again to everyone for doing their thing. Chris, do you have any final words to end the show?
Make sure you check out that episode 500, folks.
We'll be right back.
I'm ready. You're like, I fucking hate you.
Just a little.
A smidge of fucking hatred.
Not just hatred, fucking hatred.
Oh, hell yeah. The best kind of fucking hate fucking.